Well, welcome to this edition of the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined, as usual, by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
Pretty good, Scott. UC's got another tick in the win column, breaking that losing streak by beating Mississippi State pretty comfortably on Tuesday night, 65-50. We can actually dive into the game in a little bit, but... nice that they're back in the win column. They're looking normal, you know. Still issues out there, but they're looking better. The league itself, as it falls now, if you guys aren't really following it, I mean it's kind of following chalk at this point. Wichita State, UC Houston at the top. Followed by Memphis, SMU, UConn, Tulane, UCF, kind of all clustered there around 7-3, 8-2, 8-1. Obviously, there's nothing to really glean from that part of the from those stats. Everyone's either played cupcakes at this point. They haven't really dove into their conference schedule. I don't anticipate Tulane having that, you know, 2-1 win loss ratio going through the rest of the season. Then you fall at the bottom, Temple, Tulsa, East Carolina, South Florida. East Carolina and South Florida are the only teams that have... I'm sorry, East Carolina is 5-4. South Florida is the only team with a losing record at this point, with losses to, holy shit, FIU, Elon, Appalachian State, Eastern Michigan. They look like a tire fire at this point. East Carolina is not much better. They have losses to Radley, Central Connecticut, North Carolina A&T. Their wins are cupcakes, includes a 3-point win over Cleveland State, who UC plays next week. Overall, Scott, I mean, from my perspective, it looks like it's pretty much falling in line early as far as the best teams and the worst teams, but what are your thoughts? Any thoughts, surprises, stuff that really stands out to you?
I would say the biggest surprise so far has been Temple. Like, people thought they would bounce back some, like, once they were healthy this year. Like, they're 6-3 in their early going, having played a really tough schedule. With a couple of nice wins. They beat Auburn, they beat Clemson, like, South Carolina, Wisconsin. A couple of head-scratching losses, like, they lost to LaSalle. I know that's, like, a Big Five game.
Right. But
then, like, they lose to George Washington, and they just had their doors blown off by Villanova. So, like, they're an interesting team, because if this is going to be, like, a 4 or 5 bid league, it's going to have to, like, take Temple, like, getting back up to that level. And currently, they're projected to go, like, only 16, or not, I was looking at the wrong one. They're projected to go 18-12. So, it's, like, kind of like a borderline team. Because, as you mentioned, like, Wichita State, SMU, Cincinnati, even, like, Houston, to an extent, has played pretty well. It's, like, if you want to get, like, that 4 or 5 bids, it's, like, important that Temple keeps it going. It's, like, even Houston, like, has, like, the big Arkansas win. Mm-hmm. Like, they lost to Drexel, and they lost to LSU this week. Both of those games away from home. But still, like, those are the ones that are going to keep them out of the tournament if they don't have a pretty gaudy record. So we've seen the committee, like, take some of these teams in, but they would end up in Dayton if they ended up making the tournament. Which, is that really making the tournament?
Yeah, Temple is, like, definitely a case study in how to make the NCAA's selection committee's job extremely difficult. Like, they're... Their wins, their 6 wins, I believe, and O-Varsity, the Twitter account, tweeted this out a couple of days ago. I think, like, at least 5 or 6 of their 6 wins are against, like, top 150 teams. So they got great wins on their schedule. But then those LaSalle and George Washington losses, those are, like, I think those are, like, 250 to 300 losses. So they've got great, they've got good wins, but then 2 awful losses, excluding Villanova. But I think, to your point, like, they've shown better life this year, and they look better than the 6-3 record. But they're going to be kicking themselves around NCAA tournament time because of those losses. And if they can't pick up a couple more real statement wins here over, like, you know, obviously UC, Wichita State, SMU, but they really can't find themselves floundering down the stretch in conference play against, like, South Florida or East Carolina. If they lose, so let's see, they have, they have three games this year against East Carolina and UCF. If they lose two of those three, or even one of those three, I mean, they're going to be kicking themselves around Selection Sunday. I mean, they're a team that seems like they're bound to jump back up into the top of the AAC, but their losses are killing them. It's weird.
Yeah, it's like for every big win they have, they just have, like, albeit close losses, but it's just like,
oh, yeah,
not really like great losses unless like LaSalle or George Washington end up like being really good in their respective leagues. It's like their margin for error is really small. Like they have to like win this, have to like split against like maybe Wichita State and Cincinnati, like in Houston, since those three seem to be like the big three teams that have like a good shot for a turn. I guess SMU as well. Like if it just like they can't really blow any of the minor league games, which like for a team like them that's not particularly deep, that's kind of a tough ask to do.
Right.
But it also is like very early in the season. And like we really haven't seen like what a lot of these teams are yet. Like Memphis is 7-2, but they've played nobody.
Oh yeah, they are a very soft 7-2. Go ahead.
Same with Tulane. Tulane's 7-3. But they've like just been blown out by the good teams that they've played. Although it's kind of interesting they're actually 7-3. Like Tulsa to the same extent. It's just not, doesn't have really anything impressive. Although they did beat Kansas State. And like UConn, like they've only lost to good teams. But like they got blown out by Michigan State and Arkansas in the PK80. And they play Arizona next week. So it's really hard to get a good read on UConn even. It's like a lot of like a big schism between the haves and the have nots, with like the little middle grounds of like your Temples and your UConns. And like I kind of throw Houston in the mix. Just because, I don't know. Like, they lost to Drexel, and they lost to LSU. Probably neither of those teams are going to be tournament teams.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like, there's a kind of in that middle ground. So, the assumption now is that Wichita State, UC, and SMU are tournament teams. But then that middle ground area of, like, Houston, Temple, UConn, Central Florida, every one of those teams have like that weird combination of good wins, good solid wins, aside from maybe UConn. I don't think any of their wins are really that good. They've had a lot of opportunities. I mean, maybe Oregon, but then they've got like, you know, losses to like Syracuse, Arkansas, and Michigan State. Houston, SMU, or Houston, UCF, and Temple seem to have like that weird combination of like good wins and then not very good losses, like losses that are not quite inexcusable, but they're not going to help you around Selection Sunday. And if that's the makeup of those teams, I'd be very curious about what happens once they get into the AAC stretch and how, you know, how those three fight amongst themselves to claim a potential fourth bid.
Yeah, it's good. It's going to be a real churn between those teams. Like, it's a tricky league to navigate because the road trips are like almost all really long road trips.
Right.
And you have to play a couple of really elite teams that you really can't afford to lose to too often. Yeah, I didn't mention UCF. They're kind of an interesting team as well. Like, outside of the guy getting killed by West Virginia, they have a couple of one-possession losses. And, like, a nice one against, like, Alabama on the road. I guess Nebraska was like a decent win. Like, you kind of know what you're going to get from UCF because their defense is great, because they have Taco Fall, and their offense is like always garbage.
Yeah.
And like we saw UC go there last year and lose. So like we know what like they're kind of capable of at home. And they got
Yeah,
really close to the tournament last year. Go ahead.
and that was kind of what I was about to say is like they're kind of like one of those teams that are sort of on the cusp of greatness, riding Taco Fall. But they're also like extremely beatable. Like it's almost like if a team knows how to navigate Taco Fall, they have more than a puncher's chance in this game. And if UCF can't rely on him to basically dominate down low and ride him into a victory, they don't have much else. Like, I mean, you've got a pretty good roster there with BJ Taylor, but I mean, what, isn't he injured or something? Like, I don't think he's really played much this year. Let me go look at his thing. Yeah, he hasn't played like at all this year. Like, I think they were relying on him to kind of be that second guy, which makes sense because he's one of the best players in the conference, but he just hasn't been there. And that's been a huge, huge burden on that team. And they haven't really been able to find anybody to kind of be that main guy going forward. So, I mean, as of now, it seems like Wichita State, Cincinnati, and SMU are like your three locks, if you can probably put it there. I mean, who would you say is probably has the best chance of being the fourth, like right now, if you had to put money on it?
I would say Houston. Just going by the logic that they have probably the best player in the league. Like Rob Gray's like really taken a step up in his whole game. He's averaging like 21 points. And he's definitely that whole offense. So I would lean them. And that's kind of a weird place to play too. So I would lean them first. And then I probably would go with UCF
Really? Okay.
right behind them. Just because, like, BJ Taylor's, like, he had a foot injury, like, the very first game of the season. Like, it's really sunk their offense because they're just so inconsistent. Because he's all-conference player last year. Like, too much to Matt's chagrin, if I remember. And if, like, they can get him back and, like, survive some of, like, their kind of, like, tough early season conference schedule. They go to SMU very early. But like then like they get a nice like easy like road into it before their schedule really ramps up in February. Like yeah, maybe they have a shot because like we know they're gonna play really great defense. And like yeah. I'm willing to buy into them because I kind of liked how they came together down the stretch last year. And I just don't think Temple is that deep. Although they have good players, like Rose is really good. But it's kind of just hard to buy them completely.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, I definitely think Houston is the number four. I would probably put the edge over Temple at this point, just because I think they have the better wins than Central Florida. Like we were kind of talking about earlier, I mean, they have like, five or six, top 150 wins that are kind of offset by those losses, but I still think that's better than what Central Florida does. And I mean, if you're gonna like basically say if, like deciding today who's that fourth team, I would put, or I'm sorry, who's, I mean, who's that fifth team to potentially slide in that slot? I would probably give the slight edge to Temple, but I think your point is definitely valid. Temple's just not deep enough to make a huge run. I mean, maybe they pull it together and pick up a few big wins along the way and then sputter out down the stretch, but they're still able to bank off that those strong wins come Selection Sunday. But I think you're right. I think UCF will have the horses to carry them through, especially if they get BJ Taylor back here in a couple of weeks. So yeah, I mean, overall, I think the conference is kind of breaking as we thought. I really wish that South Florida and East Carolina were better. I mean, I know like East Carolina is a tough job. They fired their head coach. That's basically like a pit of, I don't even know how you even rebuild that program. They have no culture down there. They're out overmatched by several teams in their own state, as well as teams right across the border for local recruits. South Florida should be a lot better than they are. I don't know why they're not, but they should be. And they shouldn't be losing to teams like frickin' like Radley or whoever the hell they lost to. I don't know. Morgan State, EMU, Elon, FIU. Like, South Florida was a tournament team like 2 or 3 years ago. Like, they should not be this bad. And they just renovated an arena. Like, they got a sparkly new arena. They have some recent tournament history. They should not be this awful.
It's been a long time since they made the tournament. It was 2012 when they made the tournament. Like, Orlando Antigua was like an interesting like follow-up to Stan Heath. But, like, I don't think he recruited the way they thought he would. And, like, they've had a really tough time of keeping any good player that they've had in
right.
the last, like, 5 years. Like, Levine, like, went to Virginia Tech and was, like, a big star. Like, of course, there's, like, a lot of other players, too, that fit in there. Like, that's just a really tough place to win. Like, it's kind of a miracle Stan Heath actually won there. It seems, I don't know, it just seems like every good player they have will transfer out. And it's just, like, a really tough place to recruit. And Brian Gregory's really got, like, I'm sure he's, like, a decent coach. Like, he did, like, a good job at Dayton. And
yeah.
It's an okay job at Georgia Tech. Like, he's really got his work cut out for him.
Yeah, I don't get how it's a hard place to recruit to, right? Like, Florida's a pretty decent, I mean, obviously Florida's the football state, but, I mean, they have decent basketball players down there. And you got to figure, like, the ability to recruit to South Florida, you play in a sparkling new arena, you're in Tampa, so you're, like, a stone's throw from the beach. I got to figure they can attract some recruits down there if they have even a little bit of success. I'm just shocked that, like, the transition from Heath to Orlando Antigua was such a mess. Like, I don't understand the dynamics of going on with that program, but, like, to your point, like, they had so many transfers, like, so many. Like, was it him running players off, or were players just pissed off with him and just wanted to leave? Like, it's just strange.
Yeah, like, just a really weird situation. So I think a lot of it was him, because, like, they just unceremoniously, like, dumped him at the end of last season.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, he was supposed to be, like, a big-time recruiter. At least, like, he was one of, like, Cal's top guys at Kentucky. That really did not translate.
It did not work at all. So I feel like if you're a head coach at, like, I don't know, what's a good, like, St. Bonaventure. They're a solid program now. If you're looking at East Carolina or South Florida, I would much rather try to build a program down in South Florida than East Carolina. Like, East Carolina, they're going to be probably at the end of the year maybe a top 250 team just by way of having played, you know, Wichita State, UC, and SMU to pull up their RPI. But, like, trying to rebuild East Carolina into anything other than a dumpster that's not yet lit on fire is a challenge. I don't even know how they do that. You gotta bring, like, just some hot coach who can basically come in there and you know, sell snow to a snowman, essentially.
That's more like one of those places where you just have to, like, keep mining those recruits, like those, like, decent recruits, like, in North Carolina. Just hope, like, you can unearth some good talent. Now, Jeff Lebo was not able to do that. As you mentioned, he, like, resigned really early in the season. So, yeah, like, they're in a kind of a weird spot. So, I really don't know where you go with that hire. Besides, like,
yeah, just
aiming for somebody, like, interesting and hoping that it all works out.
Yeah, I mean, they could either go, like, the retread route and get, like, a Tubby Smith, who, I don't even know how that's supposed to work with Memphis. Or they go the route of, like, an assistant coach at a top program, like a Duke or a UK, and some guy who has a reputation to recruit and who has some kind of expertise, either offensively or defensively. Like, you know, you hire, like, a Mick Cronin because he has an expertise in defense, and he's just going to make your team be an expert at that type at that end of the floor. So they need someone like that. Or they potentially overpay for like a mid-major coach, like, you know, a St. Bonaventure head coach, give him $2 million and the promise of like a brand new arena and, you know, flights to wherever he wants to go. But I don't see East Carolina putting that kind of investment in hoops.
Yeah, but definitely not. Cause like, it's not like Jeff Labo was a terrible coach. Like he won 23 games there somehow, which seems like a miracle.
Like yeah.
Apparently,
it's like double the amount he should have.
He's one of three East Carolina coaches to have multiple winning seasons in their Division I history. And that was their first ever 21 season. That's just an impossible place to win. At least, like, you have hope at South Florida.
Oh, yeah.
You really just don't have any type of hope at East Carolina. Like, you're kind of even behind, like the Wilmingtons and, like, schools like that there. Like, I really don't... Like, if they're not going to commit to basketball, really, what do you do?
Well, yeah, that's the problem. Is like, you know, UNC Wilmington at least has that... Like, even, like, UNC Wilmington, UNC Greensboro. Like, they at least... They know their basketball schools, and so, like, the administration is, like, 100% pouring cash into that program. I mean, it might not be the kind of cash that an East Carolina could potentially spend being in the American... But you at least have a program there that if a recruit walks into there and says, "Hey, yeah, I know I'm coming into a program that it has the full commitment of everybody around it, and the head coach knows that, and the head coach isn't just blowing smoke." East Carolina, it's, you know, they're a football school, and I think the administration kind of leans that way. And unfortunately, unless they even come make some kind of like 50-50 split. It's East Carolina is never going to be more than just a 15 or 20 win tops school.
20 win seems like a miracle. It's like if they go over 500, they did
yeah.
a good job. Like just looking through like their last like 16 years, it's a nightmare. Like so many single digit win seasons.
Like there's no history there. Like at least like UNC Greensboro and UNC Wilmington can say, "Hey, yeah, we've been to the tournament sometimes. Like we have a couple of those bids." Like even like UNC Wilmington is like your classic like mid-major surprise Cinderella team because they have that kind of history.
Yeah, definitely. And like just I don't know if it's like East Carolina like just move to leagues where like it's impossible for them to win, like the old Conference USA, because like the new Conference USA is like the only league that they've had sustained success, like and they've just been like pummeled in the America, and their best record was last year where they went 15-18.
Right.
Like, I really don't know what a program like that's supposed to do.
It's hard. Like they need to basically get the AD to say, "Hey, we need to turn this around. We need to invest in hoops. We need to make sure that we're not a football school. Otherwise, everything goes dark between December and March. Like that's we just have to renovate the arena. We have to get a good coach in here. We have to, you know, get the boosters on board. But that's like." That's like asking a lot for a school. Like if East Carolina automatically got, I mean, every East Carolina fan's wild dream is an ACC. If they automatically got like an ACC bid, that's something where like the AD can come in there and say, "Hey, we're going to be a basketball school now. Football is doing fine. We'll put a little money there, but we're going to make the basketball program solid again. We're going to commit to that." Because you have the resources, but like it's not like you can say that in the American at this point, especially when East Carolina has built itself up as a football school brand. It's hard to make that change. Like UC was able to do that on the opposite trend. I mean, during Brian Kelly's run, I was talking to some of the teenagers like in my neighborhood at the time, and they were like, "Yeah, I'm going to UC. It's such a cool football school." And I'm like, "That's not how it always was." When I was growing up, it was a basketball school, and they maybe had like 13 fans at football games. But UC was able to kind of make that transition to kind of a 50-50 football basketball school. Due in large part because of the Huggins fiasco, but UC was able to do that in large part also because of the fact that they were in the Big East and had a nice bump in terms of revenue and stuff like that. So I just don't see any of that happening in East Carolina.
Yeah, like, I know there's been some heat on their athletic director, just for the, because if you put all your eggs in the football basket, and then you fire, like, a successful coach and go in, like, the tank, it's really hard to bounce out of that one. And now, like, their basketball program and football program are both, like, in shambles.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be interesting to see what happens there. I guess they're at least good at baseball or something. I don't know.
Or something, yeah. Or something indeed. So, at the end of the day, I think the conference itself, and the challenge for the conference is making sure that, I mean, every conference has your tire fire programs. Like I don't know, the ACC, they're apparently Pitt, which I don't know why the hell they let their head coach go to TCU, but, you know, Jamie Dixon is looking like a rock star at this point. I mean, the ACC has Pitt. The Big 12 has, I don't know who the Big 12 has. Oklahoma State, maybe? Big 12 is actually pretty stacked top to bottom. Let's just forget the Big 12.
Yeah, Big 12 is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know who to pick out of the Big 12. Big East has DePaul, which, miss you, DePaul. Big 10 has Rutgers, probably. Maybe Northwestern, but, I mean, they seem to be pretty solid every year. American's going to always have one or two bad teams. The challenge for the American is, can those bad teams not be like a 350, 300 level RPI program? And the problem right now is that East Carolina and South Florida are really dragging it down in that respect. And it's almost putting more pressure on the middles and the tops of the conference to really pull that up from an RPI standpoint. I think Wichita State, UC, and SMU can do that. Houston, UConn, UCF, and Temple really got to be the teams that don't have major, major bad losses throughout the rest of the year. They just can't afford that. Otherwise, top to bottom, you're going to have another situation in the Selection Sunday where the conference gets three bids, and then there's no chance at a fourth or a fifth, just because those teams just have such bad losses on their schedule.
Yeah, I think that's really the important part of adding Wichita State.
Yeah,
like you add that another like marquee team to the top of the league to push the balance back towards the top, because what we've been seeing for so long, like if any team loses in the middle, like they're almost sunk. Besides the one year where like the league got like four teams in, it's like been mostly like a two bid league. It's so like the bottom of the league is just so bad. Like almost year in and year out, like there's at least like three teams or even like four teams that have just been terrible since the inception of the league. Like I know like Tulane seems like they're getting a little better.
Right.
But then, like, it's, like, Memphis that's had, like, the big free fall. Like, Tubby Smith, like...
Awful. Awful hire. Don't get that.
Yeah. Like, a complete misstep. And, like, all, like, the hit pieces are coming out on him now. He doesn't recruit, like, very well. Like, he just, like, phoned him to Memphis. And, yeah, like, the whole, like, Lawson thing. Like, losing your, like, two best players. Like, it's not really a good look. And I think their best win this year is NKU, which is, like, I guess NKU is, like, doing fine, but, oh, that's not really great. And they're just going to go through, like, another year where they just get, like, murdered in league play.
Yeah, I mean, you can say anything about Josh Pastner. I mean, at least the guy can recruit. I mean, hit or miss whether or not those recruiting practices were really above bar, but... You know, at least he got the players in there. I mean, he had to bring along their fathers, but hey, they got top talent in Memphis. That's a program that's a big disappointment. It's like they're first and foremost a basketball school. That's their bread and butter. Same with UConn. They should not be losing to they should not be losing to the teams they're losing to. Like Memphis should never be losing to UAB. And their dumpster is off. Their wins are like, yeah, to your point, their best win is NKU. They're not a 7-2 basketball team. They might win 20 games this year. They're not good at all, and that's really disappointing. That's the part of the conference that's really awful. Like, if UConn and Memphis were playing at the level that they should be and that they historically have been, this is a 4 or 5 bid conference easily, but they're not, and it's really, really, really concerning.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. Like UConn just had a bunch of like different issues in the last couple of years, especially with the injuries. They've really been just hammered with injuries. It's like almost all of their good young players, and like they've been really thin. And like people have been questioning Kevin Ollie, I know, like pretty hardcore the last couple of years. They're getting like just like one of those programs back on track, like Memphis or UConn, would just be like a nice look for the league, even if like it doesn't mean like anything like too much. Like those like your two of your big like name programs that have like some cachet. Like nothing against really like Houston or SMU or like UCF, but it takes a lot to like really push, like to move the needle if like you're one of those teams, just because they don't have the history. I mean, Houston did in the 80s, but and SMU like has like buzz around them because they did so well like with Larry Brown and now their coach like Jankovich. But they just like don't stand out like a UConn or a Memphis.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing is like, a lot, for better or worse, the selection committee picks teams based on perception, and it's tough to have like a Houston or UCF break through if they don't have that name brand recognition like a Memphis or UConn has. If you're looking at like similar resumes, I would be shocked if like Houston or UCF got picked over a Memphis or UConn. If the committee's looking at it. So you're right. I mean, it's important. Those are name programs that, you know, Wichita State, UC, and SMU at the top of the conference look good if you're looking at the numbers. But optically, if you have UConn and Memphis up there as well, the entire conference just looks better. It looks like the old Big East days. I mean, not to the extent of like the Big East that got 10 bids that one year, but I mean, it makes the conference look better than what it was in the inception when it was like two bids maybe.
And like UConn probably still is like the biggest team in the conference. Like all their like pretty much almost like every big game they have is like always on like national TV. I guess you say that same for everybody, but like UConn's just like one of those like big national brands where they'll push like the UConn game. And like push like the, I guess like Wichita State like is up like, to that level like where they're a top 10 team the last couple of years. Like if like they pushed UC as hard as like they pushed UConn at ESPN, like UC is like overall would be probably higher.
Yeah,
and they'd get like the little more of like the national perception that doesn't seem like they get.
Right. Final, I guess you hope Tubby Smith, I guess, figures it out at Memphis. But, I mean, to your kind of what you're saying a little earlier, it sounds like he's basically pulling a Tuberville on them. And I don't know, Ollie, I don't know. I'm not inside those UConn circles, but I'd be surprised if the shine hasn't rubbed off on him. Anything, any other thoughts you have on the conference in general, or should we kind of dive into UC?
Let's dive into UC.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that. This is a Bearcats blogcast after all. UC beat an previously unbeaten Memphis or Mississippi State Bulldogs team 65 to 50 on Tuesday night. I mean, they were unbeaten, but, you know, their best win was Dayton, and they basically let Dayton back into that game. But, I mean, that's not a bad Mississippi State Bulldogs team. They're really young. Obviously, it's Mississippi State, so definitely a football school, but they've got some basketball history there. Ben Howland is the coach, former UCLA legend. That's a good team that UC beat on Tuesday night. Do you have any like initial thoughts on that win?
My biggest takeaway was it was a nice win. Like Mississippi State's probably going to be an NIT team.
Yeah,
but like those are the teams that you have to beat, and they'll probably have win 18, 19, 20 games. It's like a very solid win, especially if like they get better as the season goes along. Like you mentioned, like a very young team. Like Ben Howland really tends to turn over that roster the last couple of years. And like we saw a really solid game from Jacob Evans, who's been like kind of an enigma lately. He's had a really weird season. Like he wasn't there against Florida. Like probably one of the biggest reasons why they lost that game is because he didn't have a good game. Like, then he bounced back and, like, put up, like, 24, 8, 3 blocks, 2 assists. Like, really just carried the team. And getting just consistent play from Jacob Evans is going to be the difference between if this team goes really far than if this team, like, has an early exit.
Yeah, interesting to see kind of the switch of Evans over the last couple of games. Like, obviously, point guard has been a major issue this year. All of us have been disappointed with Kane Broome. Justin Jenever has done his best to kind of fill in a little bit. But Mick sees that, and he starts playing Evans there at the point a little more. Not necessarily take the ball out, but like at least in half-court offense, he's having Evans sit at the top of the key. And it's been fairly successful, it seems like. He did it a little bit against Florida, a lot more against Mississippi State. And like, to your point, I mean, Evans lit it up. I mean, 24 points, he was 4-7 from three. I don't know what to make of that. I mean, that's definitely something that makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, Evans being kind of your taller, you know, stretch forward guard, having him at the top of the key to kind of either drive or sit or step off to the side a little bit and hit threes from kind of that corner area or that wing area makes a lot of sense. It kind of gives him more flexibility to use as his athleticism as he sees fit. And at the same time, gives a guy like a Kane Broome or a Justin Jennifer less responsibility to run the offense and more freedom to kind of make shots as they see fit on the wings. So it's kind of an interesting switch up. I'm curious to see how they kind of take that going forward, especially tomorrow afternoon against UCLA.
Yeah, like we saw Evans like be a primary ball handler a lot last year too. So I think it's like a role that seems like he's better suited at, especially since like you mentioned the point guard situation, and it's like kind of a mess. Like Justin Jennifer got off to like a decent start. Not a decent start. He got off to a pretty hot start.
Yeah.
A couple of double digit games against like the nobodies they played. But it was like a decent enough start to like, oh, maybe Justin Jennifer's got a little something this year. And then like as the schedule has like progressed, he's taken an obvious like step back to where you can't really depend on like his contributions too much, especially offensively. Like he still gets like the ball moving, but like his scoring is like just taking such a giant step back where you can't really depend on him to be like really anything. Like Broome, we've seen like him be a good scorer off the bench. Like that just kind of seems like what his role is going to be like this year.
Yeah.
And even then that was like kind of hit and miss. Like he was a nice facilitator against Mississippi State. But he only had, like, 2 points. And, like, with the point guards, Like, their major problem is their defense. It's like neither one of them are
Yeah.
very good at defense. And I
Which is
think.
surprising because, like, Jennifer's not, I mean, he's been in the system for a while, but even then, like, he's definitely a pretty solid defender. So it's weird how you see that major drop off of that position. I mean, obviously you're going from Copain to Jennifer Broome, but yeah, it's weird how the defense just is not, I mean, I'm not surprised that Broome is not a good defender, but it's weird to see Jennifer have a little bit of a step back defensively.
Well, I think part of it is just because he's not very big, and people just have been really taking advantage of him. Like, where do you go
Good
from, like, somebody like Troy Copain, who was like 6'4", like, and like built to like a 5'8", 5'9" point guard? It's like
At
a
best.
kind of a drip, yeah, kind of a big drop off. And Akeem Broome is an offensive player. Like, if you like, you leave him one on one. Like Florida did, like at the end of that game, it was like a nightmare, because they have to pull Cam Broom at the end of games if they're close and go offense defense, which Mick Cronin probably didn't really see coming to start the season. But like even like you have to do that with Washington too, just like
Yeah.
kind of a concern.
Yeah, and that's the thing about, like, Washington had a good game as well. 16 points, 5 boards, 8 of 15 from the field. But he made most of those shots, not really driving to the rim. He made them just his little, like, scoop jumpers or pop out jumpers. I mean, he still seems like a liability defensively. I mean, I don't know. Eric Holman on Mississippi State worked him. In most respects. Gary Clark had a nice game underneath, but I'm still concerned with Washington if he runs into a team that really focuses on the center, the power forward position. I mean, I fully expect Gary Clark to hold his own underneath. I think Kyle Washington folds like a wet blanket.
Yeah, with like Washington, you have to get his offense. Because if he doesn't score, he's
Oh yeah, we talked about this. He's done.
like he had a nice game against Mississippi State. Like he's just reliable those like low post buckets. It seemed like when they needed him early, he got them. And then when like Mississippi State kind of was making their little run at like late in the game, he and Evans really put it away. He's had a really weird season too. He's been pretty much like if he gets the ball in the post, like it's going up. Do you want to guess how many assists
Yeah.
he's had this season?
Under four?
He's got four exactly.
Okay. Yeah. It's kind of surprising because, hell, Gary Clark was an assist machine yesterday, or not yesterday, on Tuesday night. Like, if he was picking up a rebound, it was going straight out to the perimeter, which is awesome to see. Love seeing that. And then you see Kyle Washington, who gets the ball, dribbles it. If he doesn't dribble off his foot, it's going up. And if Mississippi State had any better players underneath, like, he's getting stonewalled like he did against Florida and Xavier. I think that's the biggest concern for me is, like we said all season, it's like if Kyle Washington doesn't get his offense going, you're not getting much else out of him. Like, if he and it's not even just his offense, it's just like if he's not getting those little, like, 5 to 10 foot jumpers or those little hook shots, like a couple of feet out. Like if those aren't working, nothing else is either. And it's not and like that's kind of the problem with him is that it's like he's a senior, he's that's the book on him. And other teams are gonna start realizing that and I don't know. Go ahead.
Since like offensive rebound percentages dropped like almost 4% from last year, his free throws are way down. He's only attempted 21 free throws this season after attempting 114 last year.
Because he doesn't throw himself around on the rim. He just basically sits there and relies on that jumper.
Yeah, like he's been like excellent from the line, 17 to 21. Like you'd like to see him get those like easy points at the free throw line.
Right.
Yeah, like as you mentioned, like he's like kind of just happy like throwing up jump shots, and against games like against teams like he can just score at will against, like he. It's like easy buckets. Like Mississippi State had really no answer for him, and he was able to dominate. It's like at the beginning of the year against like some of these like lesser teams. Like if they can't guard Kyle Washington, he's gonna have like big scoring days. But like you can throw bodies and like force him to do anything besides just like go up with his shot. Like he's
Right.
been really turnover prone. Like he had a solid offensive game against Florida, except for the four turnovers. And four turnovers is pretty big when like this offense isn't really made for turning the ball over.
It's I don't he is what he is at this point. I mean, I guess in that respect, you basically just over rely on Clark to basically be that center. You almost flip him almost. Like if Kyle Washington is going up for a shot, which I mean, this seems so natural to do this. You just basically tell Clark to sit himself under the rim and hope for a rebound. Because you know, Gary's gonna get his rebounds. He's gonna muscle some guys out. Maybe that's just what they're gonna do going forward. Like let Kyle shoot his outside jumpers, draw some of the defenders away from the basket, and let Gary Clark get in there and clean up the garbage, which could work.
Which it had like Gary Clark's offensive rebounding the last couple of games has been like unbelievable.
Nuts. Oh yeah.
Like he's just like taking like such a like another like big step like to his overall game. Like it's really kind of remarkable to watch. He's just become such a complete player. Like he's like the best player on the team, I think we can agree on.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's nice to see that because, like, I think some of the things we had coming into the season, the assumptions were Gary's going to be fine. He's going to be your double-double guy. He's going to do Gary Clark stuff underneath. Jacob Evans is going to be your outside shooter, your most athletic guy on the team who's going to carry the offense. And we thought Cumberland was going to be, and we'll get to him in a second. We thought Cumberland was going to be, your second outside shooter to really knock down threes. And even though you lose Troy Copain to the point, you're gaining an offensive player in Kane Broome. Evans has been what he is. Clark has been what he is, but we've seen a little Cumberland being disappointing and Broome being disappointing, and then to an extent, Kyle Washington being disappointing. It's really nice that Gary Clark is still just Gary Clark, and game to game, he's just gonna be a dominant force down low. He's not gonna do anything spectacular. He's not gonna be a guy who's gonna throw down dunks every game and overmatch an opponent underneath the rim. But he's going to basically be reliable to get around a double-double every game, which is exactly what you want out of him.
Yeah, his season total is like nearly 13 points, 9 rebounds, 2 assists, 1.4 steals, 1.4 blocks. It's like incredibly solid all the way through.
Oh,
Like
yeah.
he does everything like you could want somebody to do on the floor. Like he's probably their best offensive player, even though he doesn't score a ton. It's because he gets everybody else involved when he's not scoring.
Exactly. Yeah, he had, like, to your point, his offensive rebounds were off the charts. He had 6 against Mississippi State. He had 4 assists, which is tied for most on the team. I mean, how many times did we see a bank shot go straight into Gary Clark's hands and him pop it right back out to the guards? Like, that's exactly what you want out of him. And yet he's not on the first team All-American or All-AAC team, but I mean, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, he's just like progressively gotten a lot better like his whole career, and like we kind of like wondered where he, like his role would fit on offense with like you think like with all these guys who like had like reputations for shooting a lot, but he's like really established himself. Like his like usage percentage is its highest it's ever been. His shot percentage is like up 4% from last year. His like shooting is like almost like a little worse, but it, like he's mixed in the three ball more and he's shot it like not like amazing,
It's okay. I
but
mean,
it's
for a
like
forward, it's okay. Yeah.
it's like he knocks enough of them down to keep teams honest, and like his free throw shooting has just been great too. Like he's at 84%, 34 of or 37 of 44.
Which is what you like. Like we've been, how many times have we been dying for a power forward to hit free throws consistently? like, if you're a team that likes to not be dirty underneath, but wants to play hard underneath and wants to bang around with other power forwards, like, I love Justin Jackson. I mean, who doesn't love Justin Jackson? He was the guy down low who you could rely upon to mean mug another power forward out of the, you know, away from a basketball and draw fouls. The problem with Justin Jackson was that he shot like 50% from the line. So he would get like, you know, 10, 12 opportunities a game, but he'd only make half of them. But then you bring in Gary Clark, who does exactly the same thing, and he's shooting 84 damn percent from the line. Like, that is awesome to see. I love that. If he's not a first-team All-AAC by the end of the year, I will be shocked. And I'll probably be prepared to be shocked.
I think at this point, he's a pretty good deal to make it.
Yeah.
The only thing about his free throws is like it has like kind of precipitously fallen as the competition's gotten better. He's only attempted 10 in the last 4 games. Which, you like to see that get a little bit higher. At least, like, stay up to where it's, like, he's shooting, like, 6 to 7, maybe even 8 a game.
Yeah. And like, I think, go ahead.
So, given, like, as a team, they only had 3 players attempt free throws against Mississippi State. Like, I know, like, some of that's just, like, the way the offense goes, where you have, like, really 2 guys, like, Evans and Cumberland go to the basket. Like, Clark gets foul getting rebounds. Like, your guards, like Broom, Jennifer, they have to get to the line sometime. Like, we just talked about Washington. Like that's one thing, like, where, like, if the offense goes, like, through its little funks. Like, it did against Mississippi State, like, where they just, like, poured it on, like, up 20 points. Like, it slowly starts to, like, trickle down, and, like, Mississippi State makes a little run. But, like, that game really wasn't in doubt. They were able to just punch it back up at the end. But when your offense slows down, you like to get those easy baskets. And, like, not enough guys, like, do that. Like, Broom's only attempted 24 free throws this season. Like, he hasn't been great at the line, but small sample. Jennifer's attempted 15. And he hasn't attempted a free throw since Alabama State. Like, that's one thing I do worry about with the offense. They make it a lot harder on themselves than they have to.
Yeah, turnovers and free throws. I don't know what to make of free throws. I'm like, this team has never been a good free throw shooting team. But then again, you have teams out there that are good offensive teams but don't really shoot well from the line either. Like, I'm pretty sure Xavier is like in the 200th or 300th range in terms of free throw percentage. I can look them up right now. But you wouldn't ever say Xavier is a bad offensive team. Well, let's look at, like, their free throw shooting. Free throw percentage. Xavier. I'm sorry, they are 15th, so I'm going to go ahead and bite my tongue there. But last year, I'm pretty sure they were, like, in the 200th level or something like that. I'm actually going to look that up so I don't look like a jackass here. But, like, I think from, like, a season, like, if I'm going to be concerned, yeah, they were 222nd last year in terms of free throw percentage. So, yeah, I wasn't pulling any numbers out of my ass. Like, if I'm thinking about what I'd be more concerned about going forward, I hate the turnovers. At least in terms of, like, getting a foul and going to the line, at least you're piling up fouls on the other team, and even if you're not making your free throws. Turnovers are just wasted possessions. The turnovers are the ones that are most concerning me going forward.
Yeah, because that number has really started creeping up. Like, the Bearcats, like, now overall in the season, like, turning over 19% of their possessions. And it's, like, every big game, like, they turned the ball over a ton against Mississippi State. Like, over 21%. They turned it over, like, 30% against Florida. Like, it was just outrageous. And they turned it over, like, 16 times against Xavier. Like, over 20%. Like, so, like, you're just, like, giving away so many possessions. Like, when the offense really isn't, like, that great to begin with. They turned it over 8 times. I was looking at Xavier's turnovers. But, yeah, it's just, like, I don't know. It's, like, been, like, really frustrating to watch, like, on that end. Because, like, offensive consistency it's going to be a big key when you're playing a lot of these tough teams, like back to back to back. Like, unfortunately, we just kind of like have seen this issue come up so many years, and we didn't really think it would happen this year, and it's like happened. With a team with all this talent is like offensive efficiency wise is like 48th, like down from last season, which you probably wouldn't expect.
Oh, we definitely didn't expect that coming into this year, because we figured, hey, you have Kane Broome, who's, like, the main reason is because of bringing in Kane Broome. We thought the offense was going to be even better going into this season, but the problem is that you're losing a field general as talented as Troy Copain, and there's that huge drop-off. Gotta figure if they do less of the 21 turnover games like they did against Florida, and I don't know, maybe figure out how to get the point guard to get the ball to everybody else like they're supposed to be. You got to figure that offensive efficiency shoots up. Another problem I see is Jerron Cumberland, big black hole on there on the wing. Don't know what to do about him. Like, he's got to definitely be one of the guys dragging down the offensive efficiency numbers.
Yeah, because if you want to talk about the turnovers, like, he's definitely had a big part in those. Like, 8 turnovers over the last 4 games.
Yeah.
He had a 7 turnover game earlier this season. Like, he's kind of played like a sophomore who's making his first full season of starts.
Yeah.
Like, when he brings it, like, he's, like, really, like, almost unbelievable. Like, he's, like, that second guy who really boosts up their offense. Like, the second half of the Xavier game, like, he carried the team. Then there was the, like, you know, the first half of the Xavier game where he scored, like, 2 points. Like, it's against Florida, he, like, did almost the same thing, where, like, he's not there for a while, then, like, oh, here comes Jerron Cumberland, and the offense plays so much better. Like, he made 1 field goal against Mississippi State. Like, you'd like to see him be more consistent. At least he's finding ways to get his points. He got to the line, like, 6 times.
Yeah.
But it's kind of weird because the way, like, the team is, like, pretty balanced. But, like, the bench, like, you just don't get any scoring off your bench if it's not Kane Broome.
Yeah.
It's like you Which need is, your starting lineup to be a lot more consistent game to game. And that's been a gigantic issue because Kyle Washington's been able to play in some of these games. Like Xavier in Florida, like, he didn't play a ton. And so if Cumberland's having an off game, like, all of a sudden you're down, like, to 2 starters having to carry a whole scoring load because your point guards can't consistently score.
Right.
At least Jennifer has it, and he plays 20 minutes a game.
And that's the thing. I wonder if that's why we're starting to see Mick turn to Jacob Evans to play point more. Is it the fact that, hey, I don't have a point guard. Let's put my best player at the point and then start rotating the 2 and the 3 between Jennifer Broome, Keith Williams, and Trevor Moore. I mean, Williams played pretty efficient minutes when he came in. I mean, he played 13 minutes against Mississippi State, went 2 of 4, had a great move under the rim, which I didn't expect out of a freshman, and had finished with 4 points in 13 minutes. I mean, that's not bad off the bench if he's playing sporadically. I don't know. I mean, maybe that's the key going forward until the point guard situation figures itself out. But that doesn't seem like a long-term solution. Like, I'm with you there, Scott. I'm really concerned if the fact that they have to lean on Gary Clark and Evans to shoulder the load game after game after game. Like, it should not be that way, especially if you're just going to give away possessions with the point guards not getting the ball to the players. I don't know how they figure that out. I mean, I think with Cumberland, I think you just let him shoot out of his funk. I think he's just in a weird funk. I think he'll be fine. I think, to your point, it's like he's kind of still adjusting to being an every game starter and playing 30-plus minutes a game. with Jennifer and Broome, I don't know how you fix them. Jennifer's been in the systems for long enough to not to be able to figure it out. Broome, I guess he needs a little more time, but I mean he's played like 10 games so far. I mean it this shouldn't be new to him. I don't know what you do with him.
Well, like Broome, it just seems like he's like more of like a. It seems like he's more of like a shooting guard off the bench than he is like a point guard. Then you just have to rely on like his good games. So if they didn't have him against Florida, they would have gotten blown out. If they didn't have him against Xavier, they would have got blown out. Him coming off the bench seems to have been a really good move.
It's but, fine though. Yeah, no, it's fine him coming off the bench, but it's like you have him come off the bench as a shooting guard or a point guard.
It does seem like shooting guard, where he can also handle the ball. So I kind of think we're going to see a lot more of Evans at the point guard. Like, the Keith Williams minutes against Mississippi State were pretty interesting. Because he came in really early in that game. And he came in...
Oh, yeah. He was, like, first off the bench, right?
Yeah, and he came in for Jennifer after, like, pretty much not playing at all in the last two games. Like, I'd be interested to see him get a little bit more run. And just, like, see... like, more lineups with him in it. See, like, just what you have. Like, maybe he can be a little bit something different. If, like, you're not going to get really anything from Jennifer, like, offensively. Yeah, you have to see what's there. Like, yeah. Trevor Moore just is going to get stuck to the bench. And Trey Scott and, like, Brooks, I guess they add their value somewhere. But... you can't rely on them to score. And they haven't scored, so... you're just in a weird spot where... the bench, like, at the beginning of the year, looked kind of like a bright spot. Like, oh, mm-hmm. We have, like, all these young guys off the bench. Just, like, let's see what they can do. And the answer's been, like, play defense. Which is, like, good and fine. But when you need some kind of boost, like, offensively, you just have nothing there. Like, Kyle Washington subs out, and you don't get any points when he subs out. Gary Clark can't sub out. Jacob Evans can't sub out. Like, Cumberland subs out for Broome, which is, like, nice. But, like, then, like, you're kind of at, a defensive disadvantage. Because it's kind of a weird trade-off.
Yeah, I'm really worried about next year. I mean, not to look ahead, but I'm very worried next year when Clark leaves. Washington, at least he gives you some of that offensive pop. But between Scott, Diarra, and Brooks, it's looking a little bleak there. Really don't know I really don't know if there's any real positive sign going forward. You're right. It's like, I think at the beginning of the season we figured, okay, the starting five is going to be fine. You're going to have Broome, you're going to have Evans, you're going to have Clark, you're going to have Washington, you're going to have Cumberland. Especially down low, you knew Gary Clark was going to be rock solid, and he has been. But we assumed that Washington was going to be as solid, if not better, than last year. But to your point, it's like if Washington comes out of the game because he's not hitting his shots and he's not playing defense and Mick Cronin is pissed off at him, you get even less out of Scott, Diarra, and Brooks. Like, there's no backup underneath now, it seems like. It's really concerning. it really has me worried going forward. Not even just season, but, like, next season.
Because, like, Washington, like, it's not like any of these guys have been terrible. Like, obviously the team is, like, 8-2. Like, right. Washington's just been the same as last year. Like, good and bad. Like, when he was unreliable last year, like, he didn't play. Like, when he's unreliable this year, like, he doesn't play. And, like, we've seen, like, Brooks and Scott have, like, their little, like, flashes of confidence. But, like, they do it against, I don't know, like, Savannah State and, like, Alabama right. State, which is like fine, but like when you're playing somebody good, they can't be afraid to shoot the ball, and it seems like they are. It's like they won't shoot it unless like they have to. And like the guards like looked kind of impressive, but like we knew that was gonna happen. Like you knew Trevor Moore was barely gonna get off the bench, and I'm kind of surprised Williams hasn't gotten off the bench, really. It seemed like he had like some more to add, at least offensively. Like you just have like three guys, and Evans, Clark, and like Cumberland, who are definitely playing 30 minutes a game.
Right.
And like Washington's probably gonna like play a ton too. It's like just trying to get anything off your bench outside of Broom. I don't know. It's like become a major challenge. And now like your team looks almost like kind of thin.
Yeah.
But your
Which
starting lineup
we
is so good that you can kind of take like the bump. But like as we've seen, like it's just so hard to do with like the whole grind of the season. Go ahead.
Yeah, and that's the thing is like we kind of thought we thought the starting five was locked in, like, and now you have a rotation of point guard and your starting center is very hit or miss game to game. I guess, like, let's take the scenario of Kyle Washington. If he's having an off game like he did against Florida or Xavier, do they play four guards and put Gary Clark the five? Like, is that an option? Like in that scenario, if Washington is benched for a half, like he was against Florida and pretty much Florida and Xavier, do you run out Jacob Evans, Cumberland, Jennifer, Broom, and Clark? Like, is that an option? Because you're not going to get anything out of Scott, DR, and Brooks underneath. Like, if you take Washington out of there because he's not playing good defense, you're getting even less out of the bench power forwards because none of them can score. So like, what do you do? Do you just go to four guards and figure that out? I mean, you got length.
It just doesn't seem like Nick Cronin would ever like just play that type of lineup for whatever reason.
But that's like a problem, right? Because like next year you lose Washington, you lose Clark. Scott, DR, and Brooks none of them are showing abilities to take over for them going forward. You'll have Evans back, you have Cumberland back, you'll have Broom back. You're getting Logan Johnson as your future starting point guard. Keith Williams, Trevor Moore. You're basically loaded at the guard position going into next year. Why would you go 3-2? Why wouldn't you go 4-1? Like I don't know.
I do think for next year that it's going to be something they look at depending on like what else shakes out with that class. But at some point, like, yeah, at some point, like you can't bank on those guys to get better because like during the actual season, it's really like tough to like be like, oh, now here comes like Trey Scott. He's going to score like 6 points a game off the bench.
Woo.
That stuff really does. Well, if he scored 6 points, I'd be like gigantic. Like for their bench, because it at least give you another option. Like when he plays 14 minutes,
You mean over zero?
yeah.
Yeah.
It's one thing for those guys to do it against the bottom teams. It's like another like when they just don't take shots against the top teams, which it can really hurt your offense completely. Because like then you play a 4-on-5 on one end, and their offense just isn't good enough to do that. Like the defense this year has been like pretty great. The defense has been better than I thought it would outside of the Xavier game. But offensively, it's been like more of a struggle. It's been like kind of surprising.
Well, that's the thing is like you don't expect Scott, DR, or Brooks to come in and get 10 points a game. Like when Keith Williams and Trevor Moore are hitting threes and being productive off the bench, that's icing on the cake. Like we didn't know what to get out of them at all, and they're outperforming our expectations, which is excellent for true freshmen. For future, definitely looks bright there at the guard position. The problem is that you don't expect to get any much out of Scott or DR or Brooks. Yeah, you'd like to have 4 or 6 points per game out of them off the bench, but you're getting nothing. Like they aren't doing anything off the bench. Like at least like in the past, like when you were, when you had like Justin Jennifer coming in for Troy Copain. Jennifer was being relatively productive at the point. Like, he wasn't giving you Troy Copain numbers, but his assist to turnover ratio was solid. He was getting other players involved. He was getting a few points himself. But you could at least point to that position in the future and saying, hey, yeah, he's probably, you know, you're going to see a drop-off from Troy Copain, but at least Jennifer is serviceable as a guard. I mean, can you really say any of that, out of Scott, Diarra, or Brooks? Like, they're basically just, like, dead weights down there. I feel like we're picking on them pretty hard, but I mean, they're not very good this season.
Yeah, Scott, like, has added, like, I guess some defensive value. But Brooks, like, for a junior, but he has not had a very good season.
Right.
And, like, he's not even the one who gets off the bench. Like, it's been Scott who plays, like, for Washington and the Florida and the Xavier games. Like, in that sense, it's a gigantic disappointment for Brooks. Like, you think he would, like, take that next step, which, like, he just really hasn't yet. And you kind of have to wonder if, like, he will, or if he'll just be, like, another one of those, like, big guys Mick Cronin recruited that, like, shows up and is, like, good in November, then just doesn't contribute in, like, ever.
Yeah.
I guess Brooks is only a sophomore. So, but the point still stands. He played a lot last year.
Yeah. That's the concern is, like, if you're finding straight replacements for Clark and Washington next year, who's it going to be?
Yeah, it's like that guy doesn't seem like he's on the roster right now.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like he's playing at some other school and is hopefully a graduate transfer and would like to come to a team that makes a tournament every year.
Yeah, unless like Sosa May and Diarra get like a lot more up to speed by next year, like maybe.
Well,
honestly,
I would take Sosa May going forward out of Scott or Brooks.
But he's just so.
He's young. Oh, I know he's raw, but man, I feel like his upside there is just so much better.
But it's like if you were gonna play him, he'd also be a zero offensively. He's only scored 2 baskets this whole entire season.
Well, at least, okay, but he hasn't played. At least he's given you rebounds, like, just by stats alone. Sosame's, like, out-rebounding Scott and Brooks in terms of the minutes they played. Again, not a lot of sample size, but I don't know. It's going to be, let's just agree that it's going to be rough next year.
it's going to be a learning experience unless Mick Cronin can pull out some, like a graduate transfer, or someone for this class. It's like, their only class for next year, like as you mentioned, just one player so far.
Yeah, Logan Johnson. I mean, who knows what you're going to get out of Logan Johnson? But yeah, they've got to find some bigs. They got to do something. And what's kind of disappointing is that we haven't really, like, Gary Clark, Yancey Gates, pretty reliable bigs over the Mick Cronin era. There's been a lot more misses than hits. And that's what's most concerning to me, I think.
Yeah, it's been, like, a lot closer to, like, the, like, Chek Muge. Than the, like, standout guy. Octavius was okay. Like, Rubles was okay. Like, none of those guys, I guess those were both, like, more for power forwards. But they played center a ton last year. There has been a pretty big issue in the Mick Cronin era. It's like you just go back and look through some of their lineups. It's like they take on a lot of projects. And like
projects, yeah.
And, like, not a ton of them, like, really, like, pan out, I guess, the way that they would want them to.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. I think Quadri Moore was supposed to be that guy. Like, I don't know. I'm a little concerned by the fact that do they have anybody working with the bigs? Like, who's working with the bigs right now?
I assume one of their assistants does.
I would hope, but I don't know. We're going to miss some Gary Clark next year. And we're going to miss him anyway, but I think it's going to be really evident that he was a big part of the team. Because that's going to be a massive drop-off going into 2018.
Oh, definitely. Like, he's been such a good player. Like, for pretty much ever since he stepped on campus. Like, just losing him is going to be a huge blow to this team. So he's just, we said it a lot, but he's just so good. And he's playing like the best he ever has.
Yeah, it's oh man. Oh man. Yeah, they better play four guards next year. Otherwise, that's gonna be tough. That is gonna be tough.
Do you have anything else you want to get to this week, Chris?
Nope, I am I'm good. Just as a heads up for next week, we've got early National Signing Day on the 20th. You guys don't know, they have started an early National Signing Day because I don't know, it helps teams like UC, which seems like a little seems odd in this day and age, but yeah, early National Signing Day next week, next Wednesday, the 20th. From what we've heard, it sounds like Malik Van is expected to sign. Josh Wiley's expected to sign. Ben Bryant's expected to sign. Their JUCO outside linebacker, defensive end Chauncey Manick is supposed to sign. Sounds like all those guys are supposed to be early enrollees. I don't know, Scott. I don't have a lot of information on that kind of stuff, but it sounds like I don't know. Sounds like it should be a good day. I'm really curious to see exactly who signs and who is an early enrollee. I would hope that a lot of them sign, so then the staff can focus on locking down some of those wavering kids and maybe bringing in a surprise coming into the actual National Signing Day in February.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Like, the main hope is that they can lock down, like, a lot of the guys that, like, as you mentioned, like the Vans and some of these other, like, higher profile guys. You don't want to sweat anything out until February. You want to have, like, your class locked in, and then, like, maybe try to find some, like, guys on the periphery. See if they, you can bring them into the fold and try to rebuild the program.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, are you, and we can talk about this next week, and we're planning on recording another one of these next Thursday, so we'll have at least a little more information on the signees and early enrollees by then. But you got to hope that, I mean, the staff is definitely putting in all the efforts on the entire class, but it takes a little bit of pressure off knowing that you have guys inked and ready to go for next year, so you can focus on the guys that you need to put a little more effort into. So yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, you got to expect the way that that Fickell is building the class kind of as a family, as one big unit, that you got to figure that several of the guys are going to sign early. You might see a couple of wavering guys coming in here, but you got to at least figure the headliners are probably going to sign. So we'll see.
That's the hope, at least. You hope that you lock down your main core of the class, and then the rest you can build.
Exactly. So, yep, should be a good week. Hopefully, we didn't. We shit. We did not even talk about UCLA. Hope they win.
Me too.
And break.